the earth turns into a dandelion clock whose fragile seeds are blown away by a gust of wind. BBC Natural World. A majestic landscape of snow-streaked mountains.
This isn't Patagonia or the Himalayas, although you might think it was. It's Scotland. As a wildlife filmmaker, I've been able to work in some amazing far-flung places.
Flying over a figure standing beside three orange tents on snowy ground.
But my greatest challenge yet was to spend a year making a film about the elusive creatures of the Highlands. The most serious problem is usually the weather. You can have day after day when the rain is horizontal.
A man in his 40s carrying a backpack.
And when the weather settles down, the midges can make your life hell.
He reaches a tent in bracken.
And yet I love this place, like nowhere else on earth. If you're patient enough and you really sit it out, you can see some amazing sights. And I think that's what makes me come back. It's got a charm to it, this place. It's not as if the wildlife is in your face. It's not as if you come bumping into great spectacles. I've come to Loch Maree in the Northwest Highlands, one of the remotest corners of Britain. It's somewhere I know well from my childhood. The loch is covered in magical, secretive little islands, straight out of swallows and Amazons. It's a last refuge for some of Britain's rarest wildlife, like black-throated divers and sea eagles.
With outstretched wings, a sea eagle soars gracefully over mountain peaks.
Now, I'm going to spend a year following them in this barren landscape, as they too struggle with the fickle weather to raise their young.
Mountains and broad valleys stretching to distant blue waters. Then in speeded up time, brief bursts of sunlight wash over a mountainside as a blanket of grey cloud grazes its peak. A Highland Haven, narrated by Fergus Bealey. Swirling patterns on an expanse of sand buffeted by strong winds.
Deep Atlantic depressions can hit the west coast of Scotland at any time of year.
A large wave rolls across a churning sea, then a rocky peak dusted with snow.
As clouds rise up the hills, they drop their rain. The summits can get a little snow too, but not much. This is the wettest place in Britain. It can rain 2 days in every three. Ruairstack Moor, the summit of Ben A, dominates this landscape. You really don't want to get caught out on this hill when a storm comes in. The mountains, or hills as they're called here, are some of the most dangerous and challenging in Britain.
A torrent of fine misty spray.
The wind is so strong that waterfalls can flow up as much as down.
A body of water shrouded in mist beneath a grey sky.
Loch Maree below can fill like a basin before draining quickly back to the sea.
A gust of wind sends tremulous ripples across a flat expanse of water.
This 14-mile-long freshwater loch is close to the sea, and because of that, it attracts some rather unusual wildlife.
Drifting grey clouds reflected in water.
In the spring, this haunting noise can be heard echoing across the loch.
Two birds poke their heads above the water's surface beside a small heather-carpeted island.
It's a black-throated diver.
The black and white bird has a pointed bill, grey head, and striped markings on its mantle.
They come here to feast on the loch's abundant small fish.
One dips its beak underwater with a persistent lunging motion.
They're surprisingly snake-like for a bird.
The stencil-like white stripes on their wings are oval-shaped.
I love the white beaded necklace they wear under their chins. And the checkered patterns on their backs are stunning. These birds have come in from the sea to breed. They like the shelter of these islands and are looking for a secluded spot to nest. They may find solitude here, but in this land of rain, there's the constant risk of flooding.
A cluster of green islands set in the middle of the loch, then a black-throated diver floating in the water.
In Britain, they're incredibly rare, just over 200 pairs, but a few have always nested on this loch.
Soaring over the islands.
The islands attract other rare birds, although these are newcomers.
A bird with a broad wingspan.
The white-tailed eagle, or sea eagle, lives here as well, but they weren't here when I was a boy in the 1970s.
Its white, wedge-shaped tail contrasts with the rest of its grey-brown plumage.
Extinct for 100 years, the eagles were recently reintroduced from Scandinavia. This bird made the loch its home about 10 years ago.
From above, sunlight glistens on the loch's surface. The sea eagle takes flight from a bare branch.
Such a presence. It's like the return of a king.
It settles at the water's edge.
Their eagle eyes don't miss much. This one has found a dead deer by the water. Red deer fatalities are common in early spring.
The eagle rips tufts of hair from the body with its beak.
It's weeks and weeks of cold rain that does it. More die here than anywhere else in Scotland. But all the bodies make it a great place for big scavengers like sea eagles.
The sea eagle continues to pluck its prey as a black and white bird paddles past in shallow water.
A hooded crow close up looks quite large until you see it beside the sea eagle.
The crow's entire body is about the same size as the eagle's head and neck.
The hoodie is waiting for the eagle to use its massive beak to break into the carcass.
It's warned off by the eagle and hops away. The eagle then takes a couple of loping strides into the water to take a drink.
There's an indescribable spirit to this place. And there are sinister legends about the islands, particularly this one, Isle Marie.
An aerial view of the small squarish island carpeted in dense green forest. On the island,
ancient graves litter the forest floor. Some date back to the Vikings. I've heard it said that a burial on the island would protect the graves from wolves, which were once a problem on the mainland.
Silhouetted islands set in silvery water.
I've never quite bought into that, as I've seen wolves swimming far out into lakes in the Arctic.
The sun's rays pierce a blanket of grey cloud.
But with legends of pagan worship and bull sacrifices, the island has a real chill, believe me.
The sun, sitting low on the horizon, bathes the loch and its islands in an ethereal crimson colour wash. Now bathed in hazy sunshine, Isle Marie appears set apart from the other islands in the loch.
The sea eagles don't seem to like the island either.
A sea eagle soars languidly across the sky, displaying the fingered ends of its broad wings.
They've chosen to nest on an island thick with ancient pine trees. they use the same nest year after year until it gets blown down by a winter storm.
A chick in a nest, the white downy plumage on its head resembling a judge's wig.
There are two chicks, and they're both looking well.
An adult lands beside them.
It's now early May, and the last few weeks have been dry. Eagle chicks are very vulnerable soon after hatching, particularly here. By this time last year, both offspring had already died of pneumonia.
An adult feeds one of the chicks.
So far, both the chicks are doing well. I just hope the weather will be kind to them.
The chicks' white-flecked bodies look as if they're speckled with snow.
The black-throated divers are sitting on eggs.
Sitting in tall grass.
They've chosen to nest on a man-made raft put out for them by the wardens of this reserve. These floating beds can rise and fall with the water level, which stops the nest drowning. Other divers have chosen real islands.
A bird waddles ashore.
You can see how low the water level is at the moment. A bit of rain and they'll be in trouble. They can't lay far from the edge of the loch, as they really struggle to walk on land. They're just not built for it. They're a seabird, after all.
The diver settles into a sandy hollow to lay its eggs barely a foot from the water's edge. Later, it tucks an egg beneath it with its beak and sits down, taking flight from their nest.
The eagles wouldn't want to be far from the coast either. That's where most of their food is coming from.
An eagle soars across the loch's craggy shoreline, while in the nest, a chick swallows a small fish whole.
From the distinctive forked tail, I'd say this is a mackerel going down.
An adult swoops over the nest.
The parents are doing well. There seems no shortage of food.
The chicks eagerly accept morsels of food proffered by their attentive mother.
But something is up with my divers. Something's wrong. Neither of them is sitting. They're looking spooked, heads down. Have they deserted the nest? I watch from a distance for hours, but they don't return. One egg has been abandoned, and the other's missing. It's a complete mystery. Did something scare them?
One holds its head low to the water's surface.
I wonder if the low water helped a predator from the shore. Or maybe an aerial nest robber, like a raven. But it seems odd they've only lost one egg. Their chances of raising a family now look very slim.
Soaring over the rocky peak of a mountain, rising up from the edge of the loch's turquoise water.
Where is the rain? It's only May, and I've never seen this place look so dry.
A black bird in flight, then two plump game birds, one speckled brown, the other with grey and white plumage.
These ptarmigan are acting strangely. They should be on eggs or with chicks. But they're looking for water. Normally they don't need to drink, as there should be enough moisture in their diet of heather shoots.
Perched on partially submerged rocks, the ptarmigans sip the clear water. A sweeping view of Loch Maree.
This place typically gets a metre of rain in May. But this year there hasn't yet been a drop. It's the driest May on record.
The loch's long swathe of blue water cuts through the wild and barren rugged landscape. Pools of water are all that are left in areas where the shoreline has receded.
Small fish are stranded in pools. Some of them will need to get out to sea to grow.
Tiny bronze-coloured fish forage around the pool's boulders and gravel.
The receding shoreline is exposing muds that are rich in insect life. It's a good thing for birds that come here to feed.
A bird with a yellow belly.
Grey wagtail. And ring plover.
A dumpy bird with a black band around its neck.
The beach nesting divers have done well. They've just hatched 2 chicks. Any rain will pose less danger to them now, as even small chicks can swim.
An adult slips into the water, leaving the other to mind the chicks.
I'm surprised to find the other pair still hanging out by the raft.
Lifting itself out of the water, a diver flaps its wings. On the grassy raft,
they've laid again, a second clutch of eggs. But they're now a month behind the others. It's so late in the season. The odds are stacked against them, even if the eggs do hatch.
A brooding diver's eyes open and close sleepily as it sits patiently on its nest. Cloud envelops the peaks high above the loch.
The strangely dry spring is over. It's June, and rain-bearing clouds are piling in from the west.
Green fir tips are drenched in a heavy shower, and the rain starts to replenish the water in the loch.
This is more like the highland weather I love and expect.
A hovering bird in a torrential downpour, and a delicate white bloom hanging its head at the water's edge. Underwater,
small sea trout, called a finnock, can now swim down river to sea. The vital cycle that was damaged by the drought has now been fixed.
The multicoloured arc of a rainbow.
Something else moves in the rain-sodden ground.
A green, pulsating, nebulous form. Then the reflection of a tiny winged insect in a raindrop.
They emerge into the drizzle in their millions. The Highland Midge. They're on the wing from April until September, but after these June rains, they've hit their peak. The males form swarms, which the females visit to find a mate. It's actually only the female midges that bite. They need blood to get into breeding condition. The only way to cope is to realize that this whole ecosystem needs them. They're just another part of this complex Celtic rainforest, and many creatures feed on them or their larvae.
A bloom of delicate silky white hairs on a slender stem.
The peaty ground has softened with the rain and swollen the bogs. Out of them emerges one of the jewels of summer, and one that also eats midges, dragonflies.
An insect with an elongated body and 2 pairs of transparent wings set one behind the other. One flies into a cloud of midges.
I've never seen them in greater numbers. This place has more species than anywhere else in Scotland.
One has markings of yellow and copper. Another has yellow and black stripes.
I remember being entranced by them as a boy. I wanted to catch one and soak up its brilliance, but of course I never got close.
An emerald green dragonfly hovers above tall grasses.
What I didn't realize was that this is one of the best places to see them in Britain. They thrive here because of the rain and the midges. For anything that wants to escape the midges, the best route is up. This is where the deer go. There's a continual breeze, but there's something else to worry about.
A soaring bird in a cloudless blue sky.
Golden eagles. I had some amazing encounters with them. Even I find them a bit intimidating. But for the deer, they represent a real threat to the lives of their young.
A group of deer huddles together.
The calves wisely stay close to mum when an eagle is overhead.
The eagle circles gracefully and predatorily above the grassy hillside on which the deer are grazing.
For 5 days, I watched the eagles circling over the newborn calves, but I never saw a kill, although there are plenty of locals that have.
The grassy raft.
Back down at the loch, the divers are still sitting on eggs. It's unusually late, but it can't be long before they hatch.
In the sea eagle's nest.
I barely recognized the eaglets, yet it was only a couple of weeks since I saw them last. Their flight feathers have grown, and there's no down left on them at all. They look as if they know they should be doing something with those huge wings.
Flapping its expansive wings, an eaglet hops up and down on the nest. Then the two eaglets nibbling at each other's beaks.
And to see this tender side between them, that's new for me. It could have been another story. A shortage of food early on can make the siblings fight. The younger one usually dies and may even be eaten. But these two are more like friends.
Sunlight glistening on the loch's gently flowing water. Then the loch appearing as a band of gold through a silhouetted landscape at sunset.
The weather up here can get you down. But on a beautiful evening like this, you quickly forget. The changing light is mesmerizing. Even a wet day can finish with a sunset of gold.
A slim finger of cloud edged with gold, and a black-throated diver swimming serenely through lustrous honey-tinted water.
Dawn in late June, and there's a flurry of activity at the diver raft. The chicks have finally hatched.
A fluffy brown chick emerges from beneath a protective wing, and another comes into view as the mother slips into the water to join her partner.
The divers have done well to hatch this second clutch, but there's still an awfully long way to go.
Climbing up onto the raft, an adult accidentally knocks one of the chicks into the water.
They need to work on their parenting skills.
The chick bobs on the water's gentle swell.
That soft down isn't waterproof, and heavy rain can drown them.
The chick drifts back towards the raft.
They seem terribly fragile on such a big, windswept loch. With a bird this rare, every chick counts.
Now both chicks are on the water with a foraging parent.
These chicks are a month behind the other divers, so there's no time to lose.
A chick takes a morsel from its parent's beak.
The loch is an important nursery for many species of fish, and that's what makes it such a good nursery for the divers too. The parents must keep the chicks well away from the mainland shore. pine martens work through the trees and along the edge of the loch, looking for nestlings and fledglings. They're highly intelligent predators and miss nothing.
A swell on the water and grass is bent by a strong wind.
There's a storm coming in and the wind is rising already.
The two diver chicks stay close to a parent.
At this young age, the chicks are very vulnerable.
Green fir branches sway, and a wave crashes against a rock. The chicks are being tossed around on the swell.
The waves are building, and they're bobbing around like corks. They need to get out of the water before it gets any choppier.
One chick makes a frantic effort to climb the raft's grassy side, while the other waits in the water for its turn. Now side by side, their tiny wings interlocking, the chicks appear to help each other as they scramble up the bank to safety. Scudding dark clouds in speeded up time. Small wavelets breaking on the loch's churning surface.
Everything up here turns on the weather. A sunny day can turn into a rainstorm within hours, and all the highland animals need to be able to respond.
A curtain of misty spray sweeps across the loch. An adult diver gazes out from the raft as the loch is engulfed in a torrential downpour. The rain pounds the water relentlessly, and a large bird seeks refuge from the storm in a high branch of a tree. Eventually, the storm subsides.
There's one creature that has been waiting for this rain.
Looking down on the loch from a high vantage point, then skimming over a sandy riverbed.
They smell the fresh rain that's pouring off the peaty hills, a smell they recognize in the estuary, and they follow it up the river to the loch. Salmon. Some of these fish might have been waiting for rain for a month or more. Loch Maree's salmon and sea trout numbers have crashed since I was a child. It breaks my heart. As a fishery, it's a shadow of its former self. Scientists are trying to work out what's gone wrong and how to reverse the decline. Hopefully they will.
An old wooden boat sits at an angle on a grassy bank at the water's edge. Nearby, a bird with a slender neck and long bill ambles beside some rocks. Out on the loch, the two young divers are now almost as big as their parents.
July turns to August. The young divers have grown, but they're still vulnerable to bad weather. That soft down still covers their backs. They're still being fed by the adults, and I haven't seen them try to dive yet.
Raindrops pepper the water's surface as the family stays close together.
It'll be several weeks more before they can fly. Unlike the eagles, which could fledge at any time now. A wind like this should encourage the youngsters. It could be an exciting day. The adults need only open their vast wings to the wind to generate lift.
An adult eagle makes a cycling motion with its legs as it lands on the tip of a branch. An eaglet looks on apprehensively.
They've deliberately underfed the eaglets in the last few weeks. Otherwise, the youngsters would have little reason to leave. But it's the irresistible draw of the wind that finally tempts it into the air.
An eaglet takes flight from a tree and soars up into the sky with effortless ease.
They throw their feet up, begging for food. Maybe they can tell that the adults have fed recently. Perhaps the adults want to take the youngsters to a carcass.
With outstretched wings, an eaglet glides through the air, allowing itself to be carried by the wind.
What a moment for them. Seeing the islands below for the first time.
It drifts almost vertically upwards into a milky white sky.
But the wind is still rising, and one of the eaglets has been airborne for well over an hour. It must be tired by now.
The eaglet's battered by a strong gust of wind and appears to suspend briefly in mid-air before being propelled backwards.
Like a broken kite, it suddenly swings out of control downwind.
It plummets, then steadies itself against the wind and swoops low across the water.
A good recovery, but it still looks pretty shaky. Compared to its mother's effortless mastery of the air.
The eaglet's lashed by another gust of wind, causing its legs to swing wildly and its body to tilt from side to side. It hovers above a treetop.
It's trying to land, but the thin top branches just can't hold its weight.
Abandoning its precarious perch, the eaglet takes flight.
The adults stay on the wing, as if to support the youngster.
The eaglet drifts downwards.
It finally descends into the leeward side of the tree and looks for a larger branch.
It makes a slightly clumsy but successful landing on a stout horizontal branch. An adult settles with peerless ease on one of the smaller, higher branches.
That's quite an introduction to flying.
Dark storm clouds roll across the peaks.
In the last 12 hours, we've had everything. Sun, rain, and now gale force winds. That's the west coast of Scotland for you. All the seasons in one day. As we move towards the autumn equinox, it'll become even more unstable. With cold, wet fronts, driving in one after the other.
A small herd of deer grazing on a grassy hillside. One jaded-looking creature sits miserably on the rain-sodden ground, and another shakes itself down vigorously. A deer appears as a tiny speck on a mountain slope with higher slopes cloaked in heavy rain mist. A black bird with white-trimmed wings takes flight from a branch, and gentle waves lap the loch's shoreline beneath a slate-grey sky.
It's early September. Divers are now on the wing. Some have already left for the sea. Except my family, which is still out on the loch. At least they're now learning how to fish.
A diver in flight. Then an adult with one of its young on the water.
Like the eagles, the adult divers are feeding their chicks less, encouraging them to join them underwater. I guess it's as big a step as flying was for the young eagles.
The adults dived below the surface, and after a moment, its youngster follows. Now the adult appears to be encouraging its youngster to dive on its own by first emitting a cry, then dipping its head underwater. The youngster catches on quickly and ducks underwater. The faint outline of a rainbow across a broad valley.
Up in the hills, the ground is soaked through.
Grey cloud hangs low across the valley. Rain drips from the branches of a tree, and water trickles down a grassy hillside. The gentle trickles become babbling streams, tumbling over rocks as they course down mountain slopes.
Hundreds of glinting burns bring the landscape to life, and below the rivers are swollen.
Churning flood water.
But the real power in this flood is the effect it has on the highland wildlife.
Out on the loch, a white-breasted bird perches on a small island of foliage.
The loch has risen by 3 meters. Salmon respond to this extra water and use it to get up the steeper, narrower sections. They're gaining height all the time.
Salmon leaping through spumes of white water. Then, underwater, a salmon launching itself up into a surging current. Heavy mist hangs beneath a steel-grey blanket of cloud, which is reflected in the surface of the loch's now calmer water. The family of divers has ridden out the storm.
I'm hoping my young divers will soon manage to fly. They're such big birds, the size of a goose, but with short, narrow wings, they have to run at speed to get any lift.
Flapping its wings furiously, a diver runs across the water's surface and is briefly airborne. But momentum is lost, and it sinks back down onto the water.
Not this time.
A reddish-brown stag with an impressive set of antlers makes its way to the water's edge.
But spending hours quietly by the loch brings other surprises. A good-looking stag is heading for the shelter of the islands for the winter. This is a rare moment to see.
The young divers making another effort to take off.
Could this be it?
The diver flies low across the water. Then, after some distance, it slowly starts to gain height. Still climbing, it turns in a graceful arc.
The first few flights of any bird are often ungainly, But once in the air, this diver looks surprisingly competent.
The stag climbs out of the water as the diver continues to fly with increasing confidence.
As with the eagles, it's interesting to see how they cope with landing. This one left me speechless.
It glides down towards the lock, then lands with an inelegant belly flop, bouncing across the water's surface. The stag shakes water from its body. Meanwhile, on the lock, the young diver composes itself with a flap of its wings and a shake of its head, then glides away. A tortured cry echoes across the landscape.
The weirdest of sounds is now echoing around the highland glens. It's the autumn soundtrack to these hills. It's the red deer stags starting their rut. They're sorting out who's who and trying to impress the hinds.
Two stags confront each other with wide-mouthed bellows.
They're so wild and proud, although I think I'm more impressed than the hinds are.
Its head held high and proud, a stag walks towards another with a slow, deliberate, stomping gait, its antlers set on its head like a giant, gnarled wishbone. The other stag stands its ground defiantly.
Chasing can be dangerous over this treacherous ground.
The larger stag galumphs after the other across uneven, rock-strewn, sloping ground, carpeted in heather and bracken. Gathering momentum downhill, it breaks out into a lumbering gallop.
An injury now would probably result in a slow and uncomfortable death.
The chase is abandoned, and the pursued stag lets out a seemingly contemptuous cry. Snow-scarred peaks shrouded in mist.
By December, these hills are really cold and bleak.
Deer scamper across rocky ground.
Most of the deer get off this high ground. Those that remain are always moving to shelter from the changing, cold, wet wind.
Zooming out from the deer beside a small lock, a vast empty landscape comes into view, with distant dark mountains set against a grey-white sky. Two birds with white breasts and black heads and bibs.
It feels dead up here. Even the crows are silent.
The crows have settled beside the carcass of a dead deer.
But it's rare to come in from a walk on the hill disappointed, even in December when it's this cold. Look carefully at the water, and you'll find new life stirring.
A dorsal fin disturbs the calm surface of a burn.
The most unlikely burns are full of salmon. This is where they've been heading since midsummer.
Underwater, salmon swim just below the babbling surface of the shallow burn.
There's a real thrill in seeing such a big fish in a small stream. They needed all that rain to get up here. Now the henfish will lay in the gravel. Too much rain, and her eggs could wash away. Too little rain, and she wouldn't have got up here.
A salmon exploring the pebbly stream bed. Then, a misty valley.
Only in January does this part of the highlands really feel empty. Now all the creatures that summer brought into the loch have finally returned to the sea. The sea eagles, young and old, will range the coast, waiting for storms to bring them food. The divers have rafted together and are now fishing the seabed.
Loch Maree glinting the colour of quicksilver beneath a light grey sky.
And as for me, my childhood love affair with the Highlands has been rekindled with new memories, added to old, of wildness and weather.
Blurry hexagons of refracted golden light. Then two divers gliding across gilded water.
What a treat to spend time with such magnificent wildlife.
The two eaglets in their nest, one flapping its wings and falling over, then, a little older, soaring above the loch.
Watching every drama of their lives played out right in front of me.
The young diver scampering across the water in its vain attempt to get airborne, and the eagle gliding on a gust of wind. Then the diver's clumsy crash landing in the loch. The eagle perching on a branch, and the diver unfurling its wings. The coffee-coloured head of the young eaglet with an inquisitive glint in its eye.
There's something defiantly wild about this landscape. I watch the clouds that bring rain, and from it both life and death. I watch the rhythm of the loch as it ebbs and flows. It's this ever-changing weather that shapes all life here. And it makes me feel alive too. That's what keeps me coming back.
A distant view of the loch's silhouetted islands, set in a pool of liquid gold. Natural World Diary. Soaring above high slopes.
I knew that making a film up here wouldn't be easy. Filming the eels was relatively straightforward. But I had no idea just how difficult it would be to film two of the other animals I wanted. The diver and the pine marten.
A small dark-furred creature with prominent ears and a pointed muzzle.
To get close to the divers, an extremely rare and sensitive species, I'd need to work with Lorna, a local diver scientist.
Dr. Lorna Brown, Waterside Ecology.
For the last few years, she's been studying these birds on the nest, so I thought it would be easy to find a good site.
They're in a small boat.
But there was a mystery, one that she was investigating. Diver eggs were curiously vanishing.
This pair's got one egg, and they nested in a raft round there before, and they failed, and they've now moved to an island site. This is the first time they've ever nested.
And you've got a camera on.
And we've got a camera on here. Oh, it's there. The egg's there still.
We would need to work fast while the diver was off this egg. We wanted to install the remote camera as quickly as possible and get out of the area. Lorna has been using them to spy on nests and to reveal what's been taking the eggs. Anything that comes close to this egg will be caught on camera.
That's fine. That's probably fine.
What on earth would it be?
Are we out of here now?
Yep, that's us.
Lorna and I moved on to a nest where the eggs had gone only a few days before. Any egg losses for these rare birds are a serious cause for concern. But I was also beginning to realise that it was going to be difficult to choose a nest that I thought would succeed. Then there was the added risk of shore-based nests flooding. What had I taken on? A nest on a raft seemed the best bet. At least it wouldn't drown if the loch were to rise after heavy rain.
Very good hide.
A camouflaged, dome-shaped tent.
We put up the filming hide nearby, and I just crossed my fingers. In the meantime, I thought I'd stake out the pine martens. I've known them to den in these woods before, and there was no reason why they shouldn't still be here. But after long days watching, I still had no more than the odd glimpse of a pine marten. We needed much more, and I certainly hadn't remembered the midges being as bad as this.
The important thing is that I get some sightings before I can expect a poor camelman to sit out these midges too.
To make matters worse, at this crucial stage in May, Lorna rang to say that the divers on the raft had deserted their nest. One egg abandoned, the other gone. The adults weren't going to return. I thought they were going to be safe on the raft, and we were going to be filming a hatching. I had a cameraman arriving in a week's time.
Fergus stands at the shore's edge and gazes across the loch.
It was too late to find another nest. There was a slim chance they might relay on the same raft, and that was my only hope.
We can't put in a hive at any other clutches because that would disturb them. Yeah. So I brought all my eggs in
one raft. All your eggs in one raft.
Yeah, all my eggs on one raft.
Literally. Sometimes the birds can sit very, very tight, so we always like to make sure the bird's off so that we don't scare them up. It's better to go in slow and let them slide off slowly into the water.
I know she's off.
Yeah.
Lorna has seen the birds back near the raft. I'm just hoping this could mean they're nesting again. They have relayed. What a relief.
So she can see she actually came and laid right underneath the camera when she laid second time.
We just have to hope for more luck this time. But we were back in business, at least with the divers. I was back to the pine martens, determined that they weren't going to beat me.
Makes me think that all the time there are eyes looking at me. The eyes of a pine marten. It knows I'm here.
I really needed to find a den. To find that, I would need to establish a clear pattern of movements. A friend of mine and I built a simple phone triggering device. I baited the inside with something I know they can't resist, a jam sandwich.
The hope is that the pine marten will scurry along, smell the jam sandwich in here and push that aside, as a pine marten might, and sniff and go, hmm. Now already that's been set off. Pine marten one was called. That's perfect.
Clever. I know how cunning pine martens can be. You have to play them at their own game. Back on the loch, our divers on the raft were thankfully still on their eggs. Over time, Lorna has been gathering some really interesting evidence from the remote cameras. I couldn't wait to go through it with her and see who the likely egg thieves might be.
That looks to me like an otter. Yeah. That is definitely an otter. So it's walked over the egg,
tail.
Has it?
So it's more, I would say it's passed slightly to the side of it, more or less.
It hasn't eaten.
So it's ignored the egg. I even wondered there if it's sniffing where the adult bird's been sitting for a long time. So I wasn't quite sure what was going on there at all.
Otters were clearly coming onto the raft, but if they weren't actually taking the eggs, what was? There was one visitor that I would never have suspected.
Like a big band,
as if it's
it?
Trying yeah. to catch.
Is that a pine marten to you?
Absolutely. And now
these
it's
are very
stopped.
Distinct ears.
Yeah.
And
then this is it moving around, I think, taking the first egg.
Yeah.
People knew that pine martens lived in the island already, and yeah. they've known that historically, but somehow we just hadn't really thought that the pine marten was going to
But it's absolutely intriguing, because without the camera trap, you really would have said everything was the otter.
Absolutely.
But it's not, it's a pine marten.
No.
I was really surprised. How could the pine marten know that there were eggs on the raft, let alone swim out there and back with an egg? That's a shot for another film. They are so clever. If they find the new eggs on our raft, everything's lost. These pine martens are putting me under real pressure. And to add insult to injury, they've now started raiding my house.
In the last few nights, we've suspected that something's been coming into this kitchen. So we have been leaving out a few jam sandwiches. And if you look at them, well, they've been taken off the table and all the jam's been licked off. So I have to say, I think it's, look at all these muddy prints too, I think it's pretty likely that the pine marten is coming in here. And it's getting up through the window, right up here, jumping down. It's slightly ironic that there we are out in the woods setting these ridiculous phone traps to try and work out their movements. They're so elusive, they're so intelligent, you know, we can't see them, we don't get the better of them. And yet here, now, suddenly, we've got a pine marten coming in from the wild into the cottage, taking food from the kitchen and out again. It's like a robber. We didn't hear anything. Look at these marks down here. Look at that. These are the scratch marks. It's actually had a really good dig. It's like we're chasing each other.
Fergus is writing in a notebook by the lock.
Well, the only slight consolation is that if the pine marten is busy raiding my kitchen, she might be leaving the diver eggs alone.
He peers through binoculars.
To my relief, the diver eggs did finally hatch, and we filmed them through to adulthood. I was lucky. I'd achieved one of my goals. But the pine marten? It got the better of us. I reckon it was always there, but she had nearly always seen us before we saw her. Just for fun, we did manage to capture our midnight thief on camera, and it turned out to be the only significant footage we ever got.
A pine marten devours a jam sandwich.
That's just the way it is when you're making a film about wild animals. Despite your best efforts, there are stories that work out, and those that just get away.
It scampers out through the kitchen window.